For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Hello and welcome to the Tracy Sandler Show, brought to you by FIVO. I am so excited to welcome back to the show the incredibly talented and funny and smart and handsome. I just do big intros here, so you're welcome. Field Yates of ESPN. He's been on before, but it is such a pleasure to have you back and talk a little Niners draft and free agency. Welcome back, Field.
It's great to be back. We worked together, briefly in Indianapolis.
Yep.
Was there something in between then? I don't know. Days are starting to really blend together.
Were you at owner's meetings?
I was not at owner's meetings. Oh, well.
I didn't see you there, and I feel like I would have remembered.
I also remember like the sun in my life, because I live in Connecticut and I haven't seen much of it recently. So I can confirm I was not at the owners meetings, but it's great to be on with you. It's great to be back and looking forward to talking all things Niners in the draft, which is getting oh so close.
It's time. It sure is. It is less than a week away at this point, which is just kind of bananas. I feel like we spend so much time talking about the draft, like the Super Bowl ends and then it's just draft, all these mock drafts, and then it comes and here we are.
Yeah.
And that wasn't meant to be some sort of like existential deep thought. It's just here we are is the point.
Here we are. Yeah, here it reminds me of like a holiday, right? Like it reminds me of Christmas. Like you build up to it for months, or in the case of Christmas, maybe more like a month, right? And then it hits and it happens. And then it's like, okay, that was cool. Now we're on to the next.
And then we're under a community camp, and then we just keep it going. So it is kind of crazy. And that it's three days that obviously are a very big deal to the young men being drafted, the young men who maybe don't get drafted, get signed as free agents. So it's a busy few days. I'm not trying to soapbox here, but I always want to remember that. Like, these are people's lives and careers. Sure. And we want to keep that in mind when we talk about them. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. So let's start with talking a little bit about 49ers free agency and what they did. On the aggregate, certainly upgraded their defensive line. They lose Eric Armstead, huge loss, but on the aggregate, they upgrade their defensive line. They upgrade their special teams. These are two areas that they felt were a little bit lacking when it came down to those final minutes, seconds of the Super Bowl. And I think we could probably all agree that that was true. So they did that in free agency. Broaden a potential corner. So let's talk a little bit about that and then how it will relate to what they're probably going to do in the draft.
Yeah, my first mock draft, I think, came out just after the Super Bowl. And I remember thinking, and it's one of those things that, like, when you're doing a mock draft, you can start it. I mean, if the editors give you a deadline of whatever, April 25th, and you can start it on March 1st for all you want. Just the reality, and perhaps, one of the perils of doing that is that every day that goes by opens up a window for something to take place and to change your mock draft. Okay, so the Niners, who looked like they were going to have a thin edge class, or a thin edge room, I should say, with the expected departure of Chase Young and the fact that that move last year kind of was forecasted based off of the price that they paid is likely to be a rental for a year for Chase, and the potential for other movement along the defensive front that you referenced, including the eventual release of Eric Armstead, that I was thinking to myself, all right, just find the best pass rusher at number 31, and that's probably where San Francisco goes. They obviously remade that pass rushing room with Leonard Floyd, Gross Matos as well, on two-year deals. And, you know, I think a couple of players that obviously give them the opportunity to not have to address that position, maybe not early in the draft at the very least. I would say that San Francisco, and I don't know that fan bases of other teams that are picking earlier in the order fully appreciate and understand this about teams like the 49ers. But as much as we all want instant gratification in a lot of things in life, the draft is not made purely to plug your final holes in your roster for this year. The draft is also to look ahead for future years, which is where I think things get actually more interesting for the 49ers. The offensive line room, you know, still needs to be addressed after a relatively quiet free agency, more about retention than it was external additions for San Francisco. But I would say the less obvious, but I still think maybe important need for them to consider is, I do think cornerback is kind of sneaky. Yeah. Let's look ahead to 2025 need when you have two very talented corners, two starting cornerbacks that are both going into a contract year. So while it's not as sexy if you use the 63rd pick on a guy who ends up playing 40 snaps a game or maybe a third of your total snaps on defense, you want the guy that's on the field on the field for every single snap. Like a year from now, that could become a huge piece of the puzzle for you. So when you're this good, you have been this good for this long, you are always mindful of the years beyond right now. And there are a couple of places, I would say cornerback probably the most obvious one, but wide receiver might be one as well, where if you kind of play things out a little bit, a really well-stocked wide receiver room right now could thin out in a hurry depending on how a couple of things go over the next 12 or so months.
Well, it's funny because I think corner is less sneaky and I think wide receiver is more sneaky.
Sure.
So this is the fun part of the podcast. Now we get to have like a discourse. But I think they have two great outside corners. Yes, both going into contract years, but two great outside corners. And you're 100% right. They have to look to the future. They bring in Isaac Yiodom. And I think that's somebody they like potentially to compete for an outside spot. The reason I say I think it's less sneaky is because where they struggled all year was with the nickel position. Mm. What were they going to do there? Isaiah Oliver didn't work out, so they moved Diamador Lenore inside. The cool thing about Lenore is how versatile he is and how good he is on the inside and the outside. Yeah. In the Super Bowl, they start Logan Ryan there, and that he's retired, so he's obviously not going to be there again.
Yep.
But Logan Ryan, who did a really great job for them in the time he came in, they literally signed off a Disney cruise like a couple months earlier, and that was their guy and nickel in the Super Bowl. That says a lot. So I think there's a CB3 issue that they have been working through the last couple of years. And they have some pretty good wide receivers in their division, and they're obviously, and they're going to be playing some pretty good wide receivers next year. And so I think that that position in the second round, I agree with you, at 63, there's a couple ways they could go. They could go nickel so that they solve the nickel issue. They keep Lenore on the outside. They have Charvarius Ward on the other side. And in theory, try to sign both of those guys. I'd be very surprised if they didn't try to get an extension done with Lenore, because he's been so good for them. It was a 6th round pick. Like I would be very surprised, but either way, you could go into the year with those guys on the outside and have your nickel situation handled in theory. Or you find a good guy on the outside. And this is a deep corner draft.
Yeah.
And then you leave Lenore in at nickel. But as versatile and good as he is at nickel, I kind of think they want him on the outside, because this is also a really good nickel draft. So they have a lot of possibilities. So to me, it feels a little less sneaky a corner, but you're right. It's not the most important, but I think first round offensive tackle is their biggest need. Then I think, it's corners. So as long as we're talking corners, everybody who listens to this podcast knows my favorite one, Mikey Samristad out of Michigan.
Yeah.
Diehard Michigan fan, but also because he's very good. But I would love to know who some of your favorite corners are.
Yeah, Samristad would be the ideal nickel corner, by the way. And I'm from Massachusetts originally, and there are not too many players that enter the NFL after playing their high school football in Massachusetts. But Mikey is one of them, played at Everett High. Unbelievable high school player, duh. Great college player as well. And he's absolutely crushed this pre-draft process to the point that I'm not sure he'll be available at pick number 63.
But
I do think it's possible. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a slam dunk one way or the other, but he brings everything to the table that you would be looking for in a nickel cornerback. Is a great story. A college wide receiver converted to this standout, like, tone-setting special teamer. Very selfless player. Had all the interception last year. Had the 81-yard pick return in the game against Washington, of course, for all the marbles in college football. Big game player. He's a basically a forced turnover waiting to happen. Great football character. So it wouldn't surprise me if he goes like 55. It also wouldn't surprise me if he goes 75. So 63 might be right in the right range there. If you're looking for a nickel corner, though, there actually are like a handful of decent options for San Francisco that could be available even further down the list than the second round. So if you're thinking you want to go the first two rounds, you want to go corner, you want to go offensive tackle, and maybe you want to go wide receiver as well, you could hit that cornerback spot a little bit later, whether it's guys, and again, just going to throw some names out there, Tyke Smith from Georgia would be a good nickel, and Andrew Phillips from Kentucky could be a late third round nickel as well. Johnny Dixon from Penn State, terrific blitzer, a little bit further down the board. Chris Abrams Drain from Missouri, a little bit further down the board as well. I mentioned Johnny Dixon, his teammate Daquan Hardy, very small guy, but really, really frisky, pesky, excellent return man as well. Miles Harden from South Dakota, Jarvis Brownlee from Louisville. Now I'm just blabbering with names, but I am trying to underscore the point that, as you mentioned, there are a lot of nickels in this class that could be really effective players in the third round or beyond. Those would be some of the names that I would have in mind if I'm San Francisco right now.
And San Francisco does love, and they've shown in the past at that position, somebody who can also play special teams, who potentially could be returned. That's an important thing for San Francisco. So I wouldn't discount that. And I mentioned this on my podcast earlier in the week, but I think the other thing with Sam Russell is I imagine someone who played wide receiver his first 3 years of college for like a Kyle Shanahan, I feel like that could be like a salivating, you just can't wait till that play where I throw Sam Russell in their wide receiver and no one sees it coming in. I mean, I think there's something to be said for that. Is he the type of player, and I'm going to ask this about two things, so specifically about him, is he the type of player they move up to get the second round, or are there just too many good options?
Yeah, I would probably feel more comfortable like standing pat at 63 and letting the board come my way there. I guess if you love a player, we know, and I'm saying this as a matter of fact, I'm not like trying to cast opinion on it as well, but with San Francisco, they're in this spot. When your roster is one of the best in the NFL and the number of gaps you have to fill are limited, then if you have a pick and you can't find a trade partner up or down, you're just going to take it, right? I mean, Jake Moody goes, what was it, 100th overall last year?
99,
excuse me.
Go blue.
Yeah. And so, you know what they said, like, would every team have taken any kicker at 30 at 99? No, but you know what? They felt like they really needed the kicker. They felt like Jake was the best one on the board. They felt like if they waited until their next pick, they wouldn't have gotten him. And maybe they couldn't find a move down partner from 99 to 105 or something. And so you go with the kicker. That might be San Francisco this year. Maybe their board has Mikey Sammer still sort of evaluated as like more of an early to mid third round pick, but when you realize that there are a lot of teams that need corners and you realize that he had such a great spring, such a great college career as well, then maybe you say to yourself, just do it, right? Like, as much as I know NFL teams are paying attention to coverage of the NFL draft outside of their facilities, they also know that there are always going to be exceptions. There are going to be players that go way higher than people realize, way lower than people realize, because nobody, and I mean, nobody has access to all 32 boards. So if you love a player enough and you're as far along as the 49ers are in the roster building process, and don't let him go through your grip. Like if you think Sanders still deserves to be if he's a starting nickel for you, which after last season, he certainly would be on the short list of best starting nickel options in this year's class. And that to you is a 60 or 65 or 70% of the snaps player per game, per game player. Then just do it. Like that's a useful way to spend pick 63.
Let's talk wide receivers, because I feel like I've spent a lot of time looking at offensive tackles and talking about on this pod and offensive linemen. And you're right, wide receiver becomes a sneaky one. And it's funny, I thought wide receiver was also kind of a sneaky one last year for a lot of the same reasons. You had Ray McLeod, who was on a 1 year deal, and obviously he has left. Juwan Jennings was restricted free agent.
Yep.
They gave him the tender, but you're right. Now it's still 1 year. It is a sneaky thing. And of course, there's all the Ayuk talk. I don't foresee Brandon Ayuk being traded. I just don't think that's going to happen in theory, unless someone comes to them with some sort of package you can't turn down. But I just don't think they're trading Ayuk. But next year, there are decisions to be made. And there are decisions to be made at tight end. There are decisions to be made through all people who will be catching footballs. So when you look at this wide receiver draft, I think it's a position they probably address in the third round, in the fourth round. It could be a position they address the second round if there's a guy they love who's there. Kind of who are some names that stand out to you that fit in this offense?
Yeah, so if we're going, let's just start with the range being late second round, that pick 63, and then go through, let's call it, round three or four. So Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky, I'm sure you've talked about him. If, and I'm 49ers fans out there listening, I'm not trying to say this is going to happen, but if Deebo Samuel is the odd man out amongst the wide receivers, if he is the one that is eventually traded, the Malachi Corley, the comp you hear on occasion is Deebo Samuel, so good after the catch. So much of his damage was done over the past 3 years as a wide receiver handling screens. He had 113 catches on screens over the past 3 years, like by far the most in the FBS. Like you look back at all the numbers, it's like number one in screens, number one in yards after catch, second in evaded tackles. It's a True Media, which is an ESPN resource we have. Same thing, just broken tackles, forced missed tackles, evaded tackles, whatever you want to call it. But that would be an example of a guy late second round. Troy Franklin from Oregon, super speedy guy who was Bo Nix's number one target out there during a great season this past year. I think Roman Wilson from Michigan, kind of an in-between, really good after the catch.
Audience. Good.
Jalen McMillan from Washington, late second, probably at best, probably more like a third round pick. He was the third receiver at Washington, which is not to call him a slouch because he's an awesome football player. Mm-hmm. Excellent route runner, really good after the catch as well. Probably just got buried a little bit. He just was playing behind, Roma Dunze, a top 10 pick, and Jalen Polk, a guy who I think deserves to be in somewhere in the 40s in terms of where he gets drafted. Tez Walker from North Carolina. Not sure I totally see the fit there. Super speedy, long, linear guy. Has to be more consistent with his hands. But a couple of names that are sort of a little bit further down the board that if you wanted to tap into just like run after catch skills, Jacob Cowing from Arizona, a guy who had a great season this past year. Small, but fast, really fast, like 4.39 level fast. So there are a lot of options there. And as we know, the depth of this class continues on and on and on and on and on. And I'm not sure if I'm legally obligated or not to mention Luke McCaffrey, but I'll mention Luke McCaffrey because he, of course, is one of Christian's kid brothers and had a great, great last 2 years with Rice. Transition from quarterback to wide receiver. He's still a work in progress, as you might expect for a guy who's been doing this for just 2 years, but the development is real. And I'm betting on a McCaffrey just in life. And he's come a long way. I mean, he had 24 contested catches last year. That was tied with Roma Dunze for the most in all of FBS last season. So for a guy that's still green at the wide receiver spot, there are areas of his game that he's already excelling at, which says a lot about the person he is and the kind of work he's put into this.
Well, you were legally required to mention McCaffrey, and you mentioned Roman Wilson, even though I didn't write that in the legalese, you just knew. Yeah. So I really appreciate that.
Well, when there are 18 guys from Michigan that go to the combine, invariably a few of them are going to come up every single podcast, right?
Exactly, especially when it's mine. So yes, correct. So that is true. But you mentioned something before you started that I would love to go back to. Okay. So I had asked a guest of mine, Tim Kawakami, a couple weeks ago when he was on. I said, kind of similarly, I said, I don't want to upset anybody, but from where I'm sitting, I don't think they would have to do it this year, but this is just going to be a hypothetical thing just to upset people. But where I'm sitting, if a wide receiver was getting traded this year, it's not going to be Brandon Ayuk because he is their true wide receiver one. I think he is somebody that they see as a true wide receiver who they want there a very, very long time. It's not that they don't want Deebo Samuel there a long time, but they have Christian McCaffrey. It just, things are different. And he's a different type of player. He's an incredible player. He's such a unique player and they love him. But this is a business and this is the NFL and we know how these things go. Do you think there's any scenario where, I do think it would cost them about as much for this to happen than for him to just stay on the team. So there, there's that portion of it too. But do you think there's a scenario where maybe that is the wide receiver that gets traded on draft day and all of a sudden, I don't know that they could get enough for him. There are a lot of variables, but kind of just your gut and your thought process when you look at this team and how things are going to go in the future, is that something that potentially makes sense to you?
Yeah. So my gut, and again, I don't have information here, but you've maybe persuaded me to not feel this way, but Ayuk, I think, has been mentioned only because of the fact that he's currently going into the final year of his contract and the fact that an extension is not done is not a major red flag. I mean,
Well, and that's how they do it. They tend to do the extensions later. So this is not in, honestly, usually closer to training camp.
Yeah.
Warner, Kittle, Deebo was when training camp started. I mean, granted, there was the whole I want to be traded thing, but they do them later. So that's not completely off-brand for them.
Totally. Yeah. So what I would say is that it's not alarming that it hasn't been done yet, but until it's done, it at least it invites the question, the possibility, right? And Kyle talked about, I think at the owners' meetings, hey, we think Brandon's going to be around for a while, but that's why the name has been mentioned more than Deebo. Right. again, I have no information here, but we've seen the salary cap rear itself a little bit with this team, right? I mean, Eric Armstead's not a player you want to cut, right? It's a player that, yeah, at some point you got to make difficult decisions when you can't come to terms on a restructured contract. And just the reality of having a really good roster, right? I mean, already players on the roster making near the top of the market on their deals. You know, Trent Williams and Fred Warner and Nick Bosa and George Kittle and Deebo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey. That's six right there.
And they're going to have to pay Brock.
Brock's going to have to get paid, obviously, after next year. He's now eligible. We talked about the two corners. Like, I don't think Tavarius Ward's going to come. Like, I don't think he's going to be a discount relative to where he was signed at for, I think it was three for $42 million over from when he signed from Kansas City. You know, Lenore's going to be, I would think, probably like a $12 to $15 million per year at minimum corner as well. So you just start to put the list together and you're like, that's a lot of guys that are making a lot of money. So that means difficult decisions are going to be forthcoming. And that's going to, so, well, you could probably have this conversation about any of those guys. You know, wide receiver seems to be the spot where they're just most stocked. I mean, you got two guys as opposed to one at those other positions that we were talking about. That's why I think the questions are being invited. So I don't have any information on Deebo as a potential trade target. I'm not trying to sit here and tell you I am anticipating it. I'm using logic to say that at some point the 49ers are going to have to continue to dive into these difficult decisions. And it's a sad reality of the sport. You can't keep everybody. If you could, we would not have this exciting free agency every March like we now do.
And Jed York talked about that at the owners' meetings, too. He spent some time with us, the Bay Area media, and he talked about when his uncle owned the team, it was a different time. Yeah. You could keep everybody. You could keep everybody.
Just a little different.
It was different.
Yeah.
And so that's not the world we're in now. It's not baseball. And, you know, I think that that's
probably have the Dodgers checkbook is what you're telling me.
Right.
So exactly. Listen, I'm trying to just tug at your heartstrings here, right? Between Michigan references, your Dodgers. I know the Tracy Sandler notes that matter.
You really do. You are welcome back anytime.
I'll be there.
Anytime at all.
I'll be
next
here.
Next time I'm going to put you in a bedazzled Shohei Ohtani jersey and a Michigan hat, and I think it's going to be great.
I already own each of those things.
This is why I like you so much. Even though there's no chance you have a bedazzled Shohei Ohtani. But one of the people on this podcast does. Yeah. I just want to throw that. One of the people, you guys can decide which of us has our bedazzled
Shohei. I have a guess. Yeah.
Yeah, you could guess. But it does make it different. It does make it interesting. You brought up Trent Williams.
Yeah.
I've mentioned this on this podcast before, and this is certainly not a secret. This is a man who is in his mid-30s, heading towards his later 30s. And the offensive tackle position, when we go back to looking at the first round, I know I said we've talked about a lot, but I think it's at least worth bringing up. You're looking for a guy that could compete to start at right tackle and then eventually can move over and be your left tackle. How difficult is that? Because I had Jim Nagy on earlier in the week, and he talked about, think about brushing, if you're right-handed, think about brushing your teeth with your left hand. How hard is that? Right?
I'm
left-handed. So I was thinking about trying to brush or choose my right hand, and I think it would be difficult. So it wasn't something that I had really thought that much about when he said it, but that is a difficult transition to make. And I imagine not every good, you could have a really great offensive tackle, but you have to know that that guy has that versatility in theory, I believe.
You do, or you have to have an offensive line coach that you trust so implicitly that you think, hey, all right, this guy can make it happen. It happens on occasion. It does, right? I mean, we have seen Penei Sewell make that transition from college left tackle to all-pro right tackle. The Chiefs last year had one of the biggest free agent signings in Juwan Taylor, who prior to eventually signing Donovan Smith, they were working as a left tackle. He had played four seasons with the Jaguars as a right tackle. So it does happen. It definitely does happen around the NFL, but it's a tough ask for these kids. I thought Jim's analogy was a good one and an appropriate one. The one thing I'll say, though, is that something I've talked about with NFL coaches, NFL offensive line coaches in the past, is the college game is so different now. And I guess the pro game is starting to see more of the spread elements that we see in college. But sometimes when you get these college offensive linemen in, the first thing that you do is you untrain the bad habits from college football before you teach them the good ones that you want your players to play with. So there are some guys, and I'll just start naming names the first round. Amarius Smith, I'm sure you've mentioned all these guys a million times, but Amarius Smith from Georgia, college right tackle, he played 803 snaps in college. 803.
So many snaps.
Just like perspective, that's less than Joe Alt, Notre Dame's tackle, played just last year, right? So very inexperienced player. but it also means that he hasn't worked like that many snaps as a right tackle. You know, he doesn't have that muscle memory built up like guys that have been there for 4 years, like Tali Fuaga from Oregon State. So whether it's Namarius Mims, Tyler Guyton, guys that they might have to trade up a little bit for, then, which I think that when you have as many picks, I think they're, 10 picks as things?
Right now they have 10 picks. Yeah.
So you got 10 picks. Like, you've got some capital to play with because there are not 10 roster spots available. Right? There just aren't. No. So this is the team that I think could be a prime trade up candidate in the first round. And so along all of those lines, like, you might also have the ability to spend the year developing this player, because while offensive line's a need, offensive tackle is a need, Trent, unless, you know, he's not healthy, is going to be your left tackle. And Colt McKivitz, imperfect as he is, was signed to a 1 year extension worth, I think, up to $7 million, which screams like this is like, you know, a solid swing tackle. But swing tackles can also be your starter until you have a better option. So this team, more so than other teams, can afford to be a bit patient with a first round pick, not just because they have fewer needs, but also because one of their biggest needs might be more for the second half of the season than right out of the gates. And that might be a developed and groomed offensive tackle.
And it's funny that you mention that with Mims, because we've talked about that on the pod, that he does have less experience, but you bring up a good thing about bad habits. And it's something Chris Furster talks about a lot. Yeah. He's mentioned that a lot in terms, and that's for anybody who doesn't know the 49ers offensive line coach, but he'll mention a lot how rookies come in and you do have to unteach bad habits, or guys come in from other teams and you have to unteach bad habits. So there might be something to be said. If you see a guy that's talented and you have that raw talent, you say, you know, we can be a little bit patient and develop him. It's worth getting this guy because we can also kind of mold him into the kind of offensive tackle we want him to be. So that's an interesting point.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things, and it's going to sound like rudimentary and ridiculous, but like, there are offensive tackles in this class that, other than like goal line situations, have never been in a 3-point stance. And so it's like, all right, like, let's start there. Which, I remember when I was growing up playing football and I was never a dominant offensive lineman, but I remember I was 8 years old, like learning a 3-point stance was like, that was day one football stuff. And now kids are going through high school and college and they're in the spread. These offensive linemen just sort of crouch down, two hands up and just sort of figure it out. Like, there's no 3-point stance. So, there's such a learning curve for these offensive linemen now, given the state of college football offenses relative to where a lot of NFL offenses are.
So there's one position that we haven't talked about that I would love to touch on. We did talk about it in terms of free agency, upgrading the line. But I think what they did in free agency gave them kind of the flexibility to take a potential guy in the draft at defensive tackle along the line that, kind of to your point earlier, is not going to be a day one starter, might be a little bit more of a project, but that they like and think they can develop. They also have one hell of a defensive line coach. So they have a real positive there. Are there any guys like that that kind of jump out to you that maybe aren't the most obvious? Maybe a day three guy, a late day two guy that you think could be good for them?
Yeah, maybe not a late two day two guy, but a day two guy that comes to mind along the defensive front would be Mason Smith from LSU, who didn't have a ton of production, but as a freshman at LSU, 9 games played, 4.5 sacks. Anybody who follows LSU football will remind you just how rich and deep their history of defensive tackles is, right? I mean, a couple of them are now my teammates at ESPN, Booger McFarland and Marcus Spears, both first round picks, but there are more. Glenn Dorsey, the 3rd overall pick in the draft. Tyson Jackson was the 5th overall pick in the draft. There have been a lot of guys, a third maybe for Tyson, but anyways, I digress. Been a lot of guys that have become really good players after starting their careers at LSU as defensive tackles. Mason Smith is a guy that some people thought could become the next great LSU defensive tackle. He's 6.051, which is 6'5", 1/8 of an inch, 309 pounds, super long arms. He's a work in progress, though. He tore his ACL 7 plays into the 2022 season, worked his way back from that ACL tear this past year, looked much more like himself. Last 4 games of this past season for LSU, his pressure rate jumped 4% to 11%. So, you know, you're 300 pounds. Like, it takes a big guy a long time to get back from that ACL tear. We kind of saw that. He would be like kind of the swing for the fences pick in the second round. This guy is not a work in progress. I think he's ready made, but I love Dwayne Carter II from Duke. Super disruptive player. One of the interesting parts about college football is these defensive tackles in college football. You got to look past the production. The sack numbers are going to be very unimpressive for a lot of these guys. But Dwayne Carter II from Duke was a pressure menace. I mean, the ball gets out so fast in college. The sack sacks are just harder to come by. But Carter was so good rushing from a variety of different spots. He was a three-year captain at Duke, first time that's ever happened in the history of the U-Devils program. So he might have, you know, he's on my short list for highest character guys in the entire draft. So those would be two names that I think come to mind. I think Carter's good enough to merit early third round consideration. Mm-hmm. Some think he's more of a late third round pick, so maybe even early fourth. But I love the player. He's super disruptive, and I think the floor is high given the character, but the ceiling is immense as well.
I love the words for draft, that the menace, disruptive. Yeah. I love long arms, like all of it is just the words. It's great.
Because
if I were to say to you, like, I met someone, he's kind of a menace and disruptive, but maybe.
Yeah. I know, right? I don't know. Well, the 49ers, like, that's a bit, like, I just don't think. I mean, who was the last longtime 49ers defensive line cog who did not have a lot of backfield disruption, right? Like, and I'm not talking just like sacks, right? I mean, the numbers go beyond that, but they look, you know, Eric Armstead, super long, these crazy, like, you know, go-go gadget arms that just, you know, he's collapsing the pocket consistently, even if the sack numbers aren't huge, right? That's been something they have gotten a lot out of, right? Out of some of their best defensive linemen for quite some time. So if, you know, there are some like gap pluggers, there are some guys who just kind of do the dirty work in this draft. I don't think that's the kind of player you're going to see in San Francisco. I love Chris Jenkins Jr. from Michigan, another Michigan man, right? But, you know, like, this was not like the sack production there, I think, was reflective of the pass rush. Like, he was more of, he was the defensive tackle who made life easier for the linebackers. He would, you know, hold the point at the line of scrimmage. He would two gap. He would, you know, he would be the guy that would run one lane to create a new lane for a defensive lineman running a game, looping around him. So dirty work player, but I think San Francisco values the guys that are disruptors more so than the guys that just consistently give you solid play in and play out.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question. I didn't prepare you for this, so it's kind of putting you on the spot. But do you have a draft crush?
Oh, many of them. What range? Give me like a general range. Like if you're saying like one through like first round, second round, first round.
I'm going to give you a third round draft kick.
Okay.
It could be between the second and third rounds.
Okay. So Jalen Polk certainly is up there. Wide receiver from Washington. Absolutely love the player. I've got him high on my big board. 42nd overall on the big board, reflective of a player that could go early second round, maybe even the middle portion of the second round. You know, he sort of falls a little bit behind the rest of this wide receiver class at the top because he ran a 4.5 240. But he's so competitive. His body control is incredible. I continue to compare him to a low post player in basketball. Like, no flash, no sizzle, all substance, baby, right? Like, if you want him to catch the football, which is the job of a receiver, is to catch the ball, he's going to do it. Now, is he going to dazzle you with this speed and route running? Route running, yes. Speed, not so much. He'd be one that certainly comes to mind for me. I'm trying to give you a more of a third round type of guy that I absolutely love as well. We talked about Mikey Sanders still. I have a lot of love for him. Isaiah Adams, I think, is a good potential 49er. Offensive tackle from Illinois. He's a kid from Canada, so he's a little bit older of a prospect. Had a little bit of a slower start to finish of his prep career into his college career. And this past year, you know, he was a right guard at the beginning of the season. Left guard, kicks out the right tackle in the third game of the year for Illinois by necessity. And it was that game was against Penn State, who has two very good pass rushers and Jeff Robinson, also Adisa Isaac. And look back, it was like deer in headlights. It was, you know, like baby giraffe coming out of the womb and not knowing how to walk for the first time, right? And then it just kept getting better and better and better. Super steady throughout the season. And this is one of those things that, like, it's hard to do for us on the outside, but you talk to scouts about this stuff and it really helps inform your process. Is you need offensive linemen that have the right makeup. You need offensive linemen that have the right temperament. It's not a position that gets a lot of, like, style points, doesn't get a lot of attention. And when they screw up, it often is highlighted a lot more than when they just do their job adequately. And you need great makeup. And I think that Isaiah Adams has great, like, football makeup. His like mental makeup as a blocker is good. Like, he's consistent, never too high, never too low. That I think translates. So while the physical gifts aren't going to wow you, he's a player that I think will be like a really solid pro for a long time and could go somewhere in like the, if I had to guess, like 70 to 95 range, if I had to guess. I mean, ranges get bigger as you start to move further down the board.
All right. We'll keep an eye out for that and see where he goes. Maybe if he goes there, we'll just maybe clip this and be like, you know what? Field Yates knows everything. We told you so. So before I let you go, I know you're going to be doing some exciting draft coverage, like a crossover event situation. Yeah. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Ever NFL Network, ESPN crossover for a day. So this didn't actually happen, but on the graphic they put together, they had Steve Smith and I switching networks at the same time. So he's going to be on SportsCenter and I'm going to be on Path to the Draft. So I joked that he and I were traded for each other, which would be one of the most imbalanced trades of all time. So it didn't actually happen. But as I joked on social media, like 10 years from now, tell my kids I was traded for Steve Smith and I'll seem really cool for a moment.
You should 100%. And then just delete any evidence that it wasn't real.
Yeah. I mean, that's already part of my plan.
Yeah, obviously. You're a smart guy. Field, thank you so much. This was fantastic. Please let everybody know where they can find you when it's not draft day.
Yeah, safe. I usually said this, the easiest place, and I'm spending less time on there these days, fortunately or unfortunately. And social media is Twitter, Field Yates. Very creative handle. My first name, my last name, smash them together. What do you know?
You have a great name, so it totally works. Well, thank you so much. You guys, you can find me on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days at TracyFGSN, on Instagram at Tracy Sandler. We are brought to you by FIVO. We are brought to you by Bet Online. I have one more announcement. Yes, if you like what you heard, and I know you did, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating and a super positive review. And I think that's everything. Let's draft. Talk to everybody next time. Bye, all.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.